Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
Now, Dr. Nina Burns, who's a GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic, is with me in studio today for this Monday afternoon's Ask the GP. Nina, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number for your questions and queries today. This listener says, my young adult daughter suffers frequently with ingrown hairs in her thigh groin area. Sometimes large sores develop, often the size of a pea. She won't contemplate a GP visit, but is there a cream or a product to help in the short term?
So look, these things are really common and a lot of it's down to maybe what they're using to remove hair in that area. It's very important if you're shaving or that the blades are clean, that you're not reusing blades, that the area is clean before and after. Some people find kind of cleaning down with an alcohol rub or something before helps. You know, people when they go to get waxed or that, they sometimes put like a mild kind of dusting of powder on it or something after. But I wouldn't, you know, I would encourage her to go talk to the doctor. You, honestly, there's nothing too embarrassing you can't show your GP. They've definitely seen it and worse before. And this would be something we'd see quite commonly. So it's what's called as folliculitis. It's where you get inflammation in the hair follicles. So usually from removing the hair, either waxing or shaving, it's an irritation of the base of the hair follicle. And there are some antibiotic creams that work really well, but they are all prescription. So go along, have a chat. Don't be embarrassed with the doctor. And, you know, if she really won't go, then obviously making sure that she's not irritating the area. Sometimes, yeah, you know, men get this in the beard, by the way, as well. So it's a similar thing. What we'd often say is let the hair grow for a while so the follicles can actually settle and not be irritated for a while. But, you know, she may not want to do that. So I think it's probably easier to go to her GP and have a chat.
Well, just in a follow-up text, she says that she used to wax the hair, but it's made things worse. So I'm wondering, would laser hair removal solve the problem long term?
So I suppose in theory, if you've removed the hair and it's not regrowing and the follicle has a chance to calm down. So either by letting the hair grow or getting rid of the hair follicle completely. But I suppose I can't guarantee that that would do it. Laser hair removal is different in everyone. But it's the constant irritation. So things like shaving, waxing, that kind of irritate the hair. Because you think if you wax, you just pull the hair out. So that's going to irritate the follicle. When you're shaving, you're kind of pulling it back as well. So anything that rests the follicle, and I suppose in theory, laser might be part of that. But, you know, I really would say go along, even take pictures and show them to the GP if she's way too embarrassed to actually show it to the actual GP. And what I would say there as well is, and I don't want to knock this person's GP, I'm sure they're lovely, but it is really important that everyone has a GP that they feel comfortable talking to, that you can go to with anything, you know, because it's really important that you can go to your doctor if there's something you have that you're worried about.
Listeners looking for advice on reoccurring scabies, difficult to know if they're gone with the post-medication itch. Is there a test you can take to determine if they're dead?
No, not really. But what I would say to people is, you know, if you've treated scabies, now we are getting increasingly resistant scabies, it can be harder to treat. But I suppose if you have a rash that keeps coming back, that it's intensely itchy, just don't assume it's scabies. There are other things. And as doctors, you know, if someone has a rash that's not going away, that we've tried the various treatments that we think may help on it, it's not getting better, we often refer to a dermatologist or we'd arrange for a local biopsy of the skin to be taken so you can look at it and see what the actual problem is. So, you know, there are weird and wonderful things that can cause itchy rashes. So I wouldn't put it down to scabies, might especially if you've tried all the treatments.
Yeah. So what? Go back to the GP?
Yeah, I mean, you can try all the different, talk to the pharmacist, make sure you've tried all the different treatments. And they talk about the post-medication itch. Yeah, it is not unusual to stay itchy for several weeks after scabies. But, you know, if you've treated the environment where you think you got the scabies, if you're not being re-exposed to the mite all the time, in theory, it should go.
Hair loss and low iron in a breastfeeding mum. Any suggestions?
So when you're pregnant, your hair all goes into a growth phase. So, you know, a lot of women who are pregnant will notice their hair seems to be in great condition. And after the baby's born, with the shift in hormones and the change, your hair then goes back to the way it normally is. And in a normal phase, some of us have hair that's growing, some falling out and some doing nothing. So it can feel like you're losing a lot of hair when actually it's just your hair loss recalibrating and going back to normal. So a certain amount of hair loss is quite normal. It doesn't mean all your hair is going to fall out. Breastfeeding, again, there's a shift in hormones. Make sure you're taking vitamins. Make sure you've got a good load of nutrients in there. I always say to people, when you're breastfeeding, keep taking a multivitamin. It's really important you're getting all the nutrients you need. And again, if it's really unduly hair, you know, unduly loss, if you feel that you're losing way more than you would expect, go talk to your doctor. They'll inspect your scalp. It might not be anything to do with your breastfeeding. You might actually have something going on your scalp.
Okay. A menopause question. I'm 56. Periods stopped in February of last year. I do keep active. I take supplements. No symptoms or very mild and frequent. Should I look into HRT anyway, just for my bones?
So that's a difficult one. So, I mean, you know, menopause is a normal phase of life and it is a normal transition and therefore it's not an illness. You know, it's great that we've talked so much more about it, though, because, you know, women feel much more comfortable talking to it and seeking solutions to the symptoms they're having. And some of the symptoms they're aware of, things like hot flushes, changes in skin and hair. But there are changes in menopause. So things like your bones, you lose bone density after menopause. And there's more and more talk about, you know, cardiovascular disease and menopause. We know women have cardiovascular disease after menopause or more commonly after menopause. And is there, do the hormones provide some kind of protection to that? The short answer to that is you don't have to take HRT. But the longer answer is you should talk to your doctor because look at your various risks, you know, and really from a bone protection point of view, particularly, there may be benefits to it if you don't have any reason not to take it. But there are other things you can do. So what I would say to people, if you're around menopause, maybe it's a time for a rethink on health in general. Go along to your doctor, talk about the phase of life you're going through, talk about your risks for various diseases and have a whole conversation, not just about HRT, but about maybe preventive health at that age.
OK, this texter has a query around a heart condition that they have. They need medication via prescription. The chemist needs to have the prescription updated every 6 months or so. And my prescription is with my doctor. Do I need to pay the doctor to get the prescription every time?
Well, I suppose if you have a medical card, the answer is no. But if you're a private patient, then usually any service provided by your doctor attracts a fee. So most practices, they charge you one fee for if you go and see them. But if you ring and get a repeat prescription, then normally there's a lesser fee for that. I know that's the way we do it. We don't always bring people in for every prescription. But, you know, and there are some things. I know they've allowed us to extend prescriptions to a year. And there are some conditions now where you can give a prescription for a year. But usually if your doctor is saying to you, you need a review at 6 months, it's because they need to review the medication, the dosage, or they just want
blood
to double check how you are. So, you know, for a lot of things, for blood pressure, those kind of things, I'd give a 6 month prescription. It makes you check into the file because if the patient doesn't come into you, at least if they ring in for a prescription, you've opened the file, you've looked in, you've probably looked to see, are their bloods up to date? Have they had a recent blood pressure reading? And again, practices vary. I know we charge 25 for that, but actually, like, there is work going in looking at the file. We put appointments aside in the day to do that. So it would be lovely if the government paid us to do all that for everybody, but they only pay us to do it for medical card patients. So unfortunately, most places do, they do attract a fee, I suppose is the short answer, yeah.
This listener, Nina, has had three miscarriages. They've had blood tests done. They don't show up anything. But they're wondering, is there anything else you would advise?
They've had three miscarriages.
Three miscarriages, yeah.
So, you know, three miscarriages, what we call first trimester, so in the first 12 weeks. Usually once you've had three, then they do start doing more specific blood tests looking for any genetic abnormalities or any underlying infections. So again, I'd talk to the doctors in the hospital where you attended and had the miscarriage or to your own doctor. Once you've had three, they do normally run a few more tests.
Could you please ask your expert about a situation with skin on hands? Each time I go swimming, my hands develop a condition where the skin starts to peel and become raw, can last for a couple of weeks or months. Effectively, I've had to give up sea swimming.
It's just their hands.
Yeah, seems to be.
Are they wearing gloves or anything swimming, I wonder? Is it like a dermatitis under the gloves? Because I suppose if it was a skin condition, you wouldn't expect it to be just the hands. Now, in saying that, the sea is very cold, so your peripheries, your hands and your feet, again, you could get spasm in the blood vessels, a bit like Raynaud's, where you're getting, you know, the blood supply is not as good, and maybe that could impact on the skin. So I suppose I can't say offhand what that might be without exploring it a little bit more.
A lot of sort of skin related dermatology questions today. Yeah. Another listener says their teenage son has ringworm, which went after treatment with, is it Dactocort? But other patches have appeared in his body. The Dactocort isn't working as well now after 6 weeks.
So again, and I think I've said it several times, but if you have a rash that's not going away with simple treatment, you do need to go to your doctor because rashes can look like lots of different things. If we've tried treating a rash with something we think will work and it hasn't, you know, usually we refer on to someone who will take a biopsy of the skin to see exactly what the cause of that rash is. So while many rashes can be diagnosed, looking at them, some of them it's a bit of trial and error because a lot of rashes can look the same. So Dactocort would be a correct treatment for ringworm. Now, it does often take 4 to 6 weeks of treating a fungal infection for it to go away. But if they're popping up elsewhere, just go back to the doctor. If you have more kind of fungal infections over the body, we sometimes use tablets for a few weeks for those. Or maybe the diagnosis needs to be rethought.
Speaking of fungal infections, this listener has a nail fungus on both of their thumbs only. They've been prescribed tablets and liquids and no joy.
So when it comes to nail fungal infections, it's important that you confirm that it's a fungus. And a simple way to do that is you send a nail clipping to the lab and they see, do they grow fungus? Because you do get a lot of patients coming in saying, I think I have a fungal nail infection. And actually, there is no fungus. So you can have lots of other conditions of your nails. You can get psoriasis just of your nails that can cause cracking and breaking and flaking, which can look a bit like a fungal infection. So again, go to the doctor, you know, see what you've tried. What I would say with any nail thing, if it is fungal, it's 3 to 6 months of treatment. Because what I always say to patients is if you have a fungal infection of your nail and you treat it, the nail that looks broken and cracked, that's not going to change. You have to treat it till the whole new nail grows out, and everyone's nails grow at a different pace. So it's usually 3 to 6 months of treatment. So sometimes what people do is they use it for a month or two, it looks better, they stop, it comes back again, and they just haven't used the treatment long enough.
Long enough. This listener is 26, female, and the last year or so they've noticed a lot of pain and swelling in their joints, especially in their knees, so much so that it's changing the way she walks. It's uncomfortable, it's sore during the day, but the real pain is when they go to bed at night. Their hips and knees feel warm to touch and achy. I've started to notice my fingers have become sore to move sometimes when I'm typing and work or holding the steering wheel. The worst thing is the fatigue. I'm incredibly tired all of the time, no matter how much I sleep, I can't get myself to work. But once I'm home, I'm fast asleep and need lots of extra sleep at the weekends. I have zero energy. I've been trying swimming twice a week to strengthen my joints. I don't want this to progress. Is there anything I should do?
Yeah, I think this person should go to their doctor. A lot of what they described would fit with rheumatoid arthritis. So inflammatory arthritis, classically the pain is worse when you rest. So the fact that her pain is getting worse when she's in bed at night and that exercising seems to improve it would make it less likely to be a wear and tear arthritis. Fatigue would be a very big symptom of rheumatoid arthritis. Now, obviously, you can't diagnose just on a phone call, but this person definitely needs to go to their doctor and talk to them and have some bloods done, I think.
Really? Okay. And just finally, I'm in my mid-50s. Recently, it's been suggested to me by a couple of people who've been diagnosed with ADHD that I too am likely to have ADHD. How do I go about getting tested?
Okay, so I'm a bit biased on this. I have to say I have a special interest in ADHD, and we're going to be starting assessments in our place as well. And what I would say to people and what I say to anyone who comes in to me is ADHD is a complex diagnosis. It's really topical at the moment. Everywhere you look, you know, people think they have ADHD. You can go on any social media and you'll see that you can be diagnosed with it. The conversation I have with a lot of people is it's not necessarily a disease. It's a condition. It's part of your personality. So it's not something that has to be fixed. And I think that's really important for people to understand. For me, getting the diagnosis is about an understanding of it. And a lot of people, medication helps. And I suppose that's where people have to go for formal diagnosis. So there are two pathways to diagnosis. ADHD Ireland is a website. It has fantastic information on it. But you can go to a psychologist and have an assessment. A proper assessment is quite long. And they can give you lifestyle advice and they can give you coaching and all of that stuff. If you want medication, you have to go to a psychiatrist, or there are a small number of GPs who are trained in the specialist